Hey, this is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to Snug Wrestling. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
What happened to Toxic? Toxic, where the fuck did you go? There you are.
But say, he's still here.
All right. What is going on, everyone? Happy Friday evening. Welcome back to another episode of the Snug Wrestling Podcast. I am Medgar. I am the host. Happy Friday SmackDown before Backlash. This is a Friday night SmackDown before Backlash. And it was a long fucking show, you guys. Honestly, it was a long show, but there was a lot of good stuff in the show that we're going to be talking about tonight. And to help me tonight, the crew's here with me, Mr. Blood, Toxic, and Tommy is here with us. And we're going to go over what we liked about this Friday Night SmackDown, and we're going to get started with the main event. But before we do that, what is going on, fellas? How y'all doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Just trying to figure out why Toxic keeps exiting and coming back.
That is a good question.
I'm going to take a quick thing from CM Punk real quick. Does it feel good to be on the Snug Wrestling Podcast on a Friday night or what?
It does feel good, but you know what would feel even better? Is it just me, Tommy, or are you doing something different tonight with your audio? Because you sound really different for some reason.
Yeah, I've got my earbuds in.
Okay, well, I finally fixed my issue.
Okay. We're figuring out why you were blacking out on us there over and over again.
Yeah, I couldn't hear you or Tommy, and then I could only hear Snug. But whenever he talked, it was like his voice was like really, really low, like he had a voice changer on or something. I don't know what the fuck was going on.
Well, right off the bat, we got some comments on the TikTok that from Zach Rickman, Cena retains. So we actually did some predictions already. They're out now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So you can go back and listen to those. But what we're going to talk about tonight, I want to get started with this John Cena promo. It was fucking off the walls. The first thing that John Cena said, and I'm going to paraphrase because TikTok language, John. Your childhood is going to off itself tonight. That's the first thing that John Cena started off with his promo tonight. And I thought, what the fuck? Damn, that's how we're getting started. But John Cena, his promo tonight as a heel made me realize, like, goddamn, we are so lucky to be living in this time right now to see how John Cena is cutting these promos and healing. It's just so lovely. It's such a great thing to see right now as a wrestling fan. John Cena, he made some remarks about Bob Orton, Randy Orton's dad. The only good thing that he ever did in wrestling was to basically, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but nut in Randy Orton's mom and have Randy Orton is the only good thing that Bob Orton did in wrestling history ever.
If TikTok comes after that, I would be concerned because there's been said much worse.
Okay. But, John Cena did his thing as a heel tonight, man. It was such a great promo. And then to end it all, we thought Randy Orton was not going to be in the arena tonight, but it turned out that he was in the arena. Randy Orton hit John Cena with an RKO out of nowhere. And I'm even more hyped up for the match at Backlash now, you guys. But that was just a quick rundown of the main event segment for SmackDown. Mr. Blood, I know you didn't really get a chance to look at it. Did you want to go first on this still? Do you have any thoughts on this? Or what do you think?
So I think the way that they're doing it kind of... It's kind of old school style booking. The opponent gets most of the offense and most of the one-upsmanship on the heel or the champion leading into the actual initial match when we all know the champion is going to retain in the situation. And they do this. This isn't just WWE guilty of this. Almost every professional wrestling company in history is guilty of this, This is the third segment. This is now the third time, I believe, that Randy has got John Cena with an RKO now. So it was the Monday Night Raw after Mania, then that SmackDown, and now tonight. If Randy's getting free eats on John Cena, it's all but inevitable that John's retaining tomorrow. This is classic old school wrestling booking. The challenger gets the one-upsmanship, keeps getting to stand tall in the segment so the crowd can buy in as much as possible. When I think Triple H and Nick Khan, kind of know that we're all smart enough to know there's no way they're switching titles or swapping the title tomorrow. There's just no freaking way. If they did it in some bizarro universe, I don't even know what the hell the point of turning John was and what all this, you know, I'm going to destroy professional wrestling. I'm going to ruin it for everybody. Like, I don't know what the point of all that is if it goes nowhere after like a 20-day reign. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to watch the promo later, but all I can say is, and this is going to shock a lot of people, this might be my least anticipated match for this weekend for myself. And I say that because I've seen Randy versus John Cena 30 to 40 times. I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years. I've seen every move they have, every counter for each move they have. I've seen Randy Orton, RKO, John Cena halfway through the middle of an attitude adjustment, like midair, turns it into an RKO through a table. Like, I've seen him RKO on, you know, everything. I've seen them handcuff each other. I've seen this match every single way these guys could ever do it because neither of them ever changed their moveset unless they were taking moves away. You know what I mean? They have wrestled the same style, the same maneuvers for years and years and years. Whatever match we see tomorrow is one I've seen 1,000 times. It's just, hey, the roles are reversed. One's now the heel and the other one's the babyface, like Randy said. What bizarre world do we live in where I'm the good guy and you're the bad guy? You know what I'm saying? And we're feuding over this title. The last time these guys feuded over this title was, what, 2013, I think, for the unification match. And where everybody was in the ring and they were going through all those championships and John was putting Daniel Bryan over. The whole segment breaks down. Everybody's turning on everybody. Freaking Shawn Michaels super kicks Daniel Bryan. You know, like CM Punk takes a shot. Like it was, and then Randy accidentally bumps Stephanie and gets freaking pedigreed by Triple H. And then everybody's standing across the ring staring at Randy and Randy's alone. It's the same thing. Where, yes.
Just a quick question, Mr. Blood.
Yes.
Out of all those matches, which one of those matches did you witness John Cena as a heel?
Well, that's what I just said. I said it's the exact same match I've seen 1,000 times, except this will be the first time where the roles are reversed, is what I said. So it's because I don't think they faced each other when John was still a heel in the Doctor of Thugonomics gimmick originally. I don't think they faced each other then. They were on the rosters at the same time, but... In fact, actually, I think Randy was an evolution when John was doing the chain gang thing. So, but it's one of these matches where I've seen this so many times, even though I'm happy I'm going to get to see it one last time, it's the one match where I have no surprise in this, no anticipation. Damning, especially to you, Snug, I think I'm kind of looking forward to the Becky versus Lyra match more than this. Because we might actually have a title change or a Bayley return that could start a new rivalry with Bayley and Becky. And that's really enticing to me because we have not seen these two feud in a while. And it's a heel Becky against a face Bayley. So for me, as much as I don't even care about the Becky Lyra match, I honestly don't care about John Cena and Randy more.
God damn it.
Look, in my defense, if I've 20 years of wrestling, I've seen these guys every single match they've ever had. I watched them live. I have never missed a single match these two ever had that wasn't live the night it happened. I've seen this match every way they could wrestle it.
I got a lot to say about Mr. Blood. I got a lot to say about that. But first,
I'm excited to see John. But because I know he's winning, because I've known how Randy wrestles for all these years, I've known how John wrestles for all these years, they're both older, they're both going to wrestle slower because they're both trying to protect each other. They're close friends behind the scenes. Randy doesn't want to injure John because he's going to have to go on a movie set. They're going to wrestle a safe match. We know that. It's going to be safe. Just like the match at Mania with Cody was safe to make sure John doesn't get injured because he's still filming contractual obligated movies. So every match we're going to see him wrestle from now until the end of this year will be safe. So if they're going to be as safe as I know they're going to be, kind of hard to get into it if the story isn't there for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes and no, but it's okay. I'll get back to you, Mr. Blood. Let's hear from Toxic really quick. Toxic, what are your thoughts on all of this?
I don't know. I'm just not interested. I'm not interested in the whole John Cena. At first, I was interested in the whole John Cena heel turn. I'm like, okay, maybe this will actually spice some things up in the WWE universe as we know it. But, yeah, I'm just getting tired of it. Now that he beat Cody, which he, in my opinion, shouldn't have, I'm just not interested in it. I hope Randy beats him. I don't care what anyone says. Randy needs to beat him so he could actually end whatever this dog crap is with Cena. As, oh, I'm the last real champion. I don't like it.
Oh, God damn it. Tommy, help me out here, Tommy, please.
Yeah, you're not sighing on my thoughts on this. I'm actually with you here, Snug. Like, I completely understand your guys' thoughts on this. I get that. But I am extremely excited for this match. Because I love the fact that Cena brought up the first time or the last time they had a championship match or a match against each other. It wasn't the last time. It was the first time. He brought that up. And I love it. This segment entirely, for me, was phenomenal. I loved it. It truly did do its job on setting up for tomorrow night. If you're watching it now, tomorrow night, if you're watching it when it actually comes out, it'll be tonight, most likely. But I'm super, super excited for this match. So, fun fact here, this will be the first John Cena match that I actually get to see live.
Wait. Hold on, wait. Wait a minute. What do you mean? Are you going to be there in person?
I'm not going to be there, but I mean, like, when it happens.
Oh.
This will be the first John Cena match that I get to see when it's on.
Because he became a fan during the pandemic, I believe.
Little bit before that, but yes.
Oh, lucky you, Tommy. Remember I get to watch John. Backlash Live. Okay, well, rub it John in.
John went part-time in 2017. So he's never gotten to actually see. Did you not watch his Mania match against Bray?
No, I had to watch it later.
Okay. Well, this will be a first for you.
Wait, yeah.
Didn't you watch Mania live? You were on my stream.
Oh, that's right. My brain sucks. This second one. This is proof on that match. Travis Scott ruined it so bad I completely fucking forgot about it.
No, don't blame it on Travis Scott. Don't you dare.
Him showing up did nothing for the match. I completely forgot about it because of him.
Tommy had to repress his memories.
Fuck you, Travis Scott. But back to the subject at hand. The segment itself, I love all of the callbacks. Although, when Cena started talking, I'm like, holy shit, this is how we're starting? This is how we're starting with that wording? It's like, he came after the fans. even naming everything. Like, I got three words for you on what Randy thinks he is. Hustle, loyalty, respect. He names all of these things and then gets to the end and calls himself the epitome of loyalty, of respect. I'm like, boy, you're over here saying, oh, I'm the last real champion. I actually show up for things. Okay, I missed 35 dates in total. If you were actually here to show up, then between filmings, you would actually show up more than just 35 times in a single year. That's just how it is. You should be showing up more, but you're not.
I mean, it's still more dates than Roman probably has this year.
That is true. That's the sad part. He is fully on the roster, and Cena's going to end up showing up more times than he does. That's going to be the funny thing.
I mean, look, you guys, I think we're missing the entire point here, okay? I have never seen this level of John Cena healing ever before. Okay, when has John Cena ever cut promos like these before ever in his career? I know.
The aggression era, Snug. Weren't you watching during that? Do you know the shit he used to say before they went PG?
Like
he
what?
He said stuff that almost got him kicked off the air.
Like what?
You got
wait, no, this was when he was a babyface. Never mind.
Yeah, no, you got to go back when he was Chain Gang Cena, when he was still heel Cena, when he started the rapping gimmick. Dude, the shit he rapped on Stephanie alone on live TV, other girls, the slurs he called.
Yes, yes. He did. He rapped. He did. He said a lot of stuff. He said a lot of
racial slur, but his raps were his promos.
Okay. That's the thing. But it's still not the same John Cena.
You're right.
From then, from today.
Back then. Would get them kicked off TV today if they were still on, or well, actually, if he said that on SmackDown today, they'd get fined by the network for some of the stuff he said back then.
Not only that, John Cena was pushing the envelope for that time period. That's cool, but like this John Cena right now for this time period, to me, just feels like fresh. It feels new. It feels like he's never really been himself before. Like, this feels like the actual John Cena, the person. Like, before he was doing a gimmick, before he was pretending to be a rapper, he was acting like a rapper. This John Cena today feels real. Feels
yeah, genuine. Except he could actually rap. It's the entire reason why segment became a thing.
John was an actual rapper. Don't forget, guys, he went platinum. His album went platinum. He is a rapper.
Okay.
But
the thing is that I see where you're coming from in a certain vein, Snug, but it's not like he hasn't peeped out these types of digs before. When he was going up against Rock the first time, one of those promos he cut, when he came out and did a rap battle or rapped on the Rock, and he said, you know what, Rock? You think that you know me, but you're like a big purple... Or I'm like a big purple pinwheel, Rock. You can blow me. And he said that live on PG Monday Night Raw on the US network. Like,
yeah, he said that, and I half expected Truth to come out with that iconic line of his of, I don't even know if that's PG.
But it harkens back to, I see where like you're saying, like it feels like he's unlocked another gear. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's because he's so close with Randy personally in real life, because they are very close friends behind the scenes, that maybe they're more giving with each other, and you can say this, and it's not going to offend me. And because these guys are such old school classic professionals, they know mixing that realism in or digging a little more under the skin is going to only make the promo better. And these guys aren't going to get hurt. We're talking about two professionals. They're not going to get hurt feelings over some
right.
I mean, you're
right,
friends.
Right,
what
right,
kind
right.
of stuff have you probably said to each other behind the scenes in jest? You know what I mean?
Right.
So if you're doing it in character. So I agree with you in that regard. But again, it's not the first time we've seen Cena go full vulgar and off the cuff like, yo, can you say that even on PG-13 TV? Anybody who's never, who might be a newer fan, I recommend you go to YouTube and you type in John Cena's most savage moments, Ruthless Aggression Era. You are going to see and hear the funniest, most asinine, out there, belligerent shit you've ever heard someone say on live TV. And you're going to go, wait, that's the fucking cereal box cancer kid guy? Like, yeah, that's him. That's him about 20 years ago.
Oh. Look, Mr. Blood, regardless of like the fact that John Cena, he went platinum and he's good at rapping and, you know, he did find a lot of success in that gimmick. But that's the thing. It was a gimmick. It was a character. What he was doing that's what it was.
True. I know. And this feels more like him.
Yes.
But remember, but keep in mind, think about it this way. But we know that it's not. And I'm going to say this because I think.
Do we, though? Do we?
It was Ariel Helwani who said, I don't buy the John Cena heel turn because we know just how good of a guy John actually truly is. Mm. He said that his heel turn feels like he is playing a character because he is genuinely a decent and good human being to people. So when you think about the fact that, yes, was he playing a character back on TV in the Ruthless Aggression era with the Chain Gang, you know, Dr. Thugonomics? Yes. But that was still closer to who he was because he got that gimmick because Stephanie saw him rapping on the back of a tour bus when he was about to get fired. He was always the rap. He was doing mixtapes in high school. That is who he was for real as a person. But he dialed it up to 11. And it's the same thing now. He's taking who he is, dialing it up to 11, but now he's going, well, I'm at 11, but now I'm going to be angry about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably where those acting skills go to, that experience, because to me, when I see John Cena be a heel today, it's so easy for me to, like, buy into, like, what he's doing and what he's saying.
I would definitely 100% agree with the bull. I disagree with Ariel in the fact that he says John isn't believable because I think that's BS. Mm-hmm. I know he's playing a character because I have seen hundreds of backstage videos of him just being a decent, genuine human being. And you can't tell me that's a bad guy after everything he's done for Make-A-Wish. I wouldn't believe you.
Yeah, like one of the fun.
So when it comes to that, when I look at John, because I'm so invested in his character after 20 plus years of being a fan, I've been invested in John for over 2 decades, right? I've been invested in John since before these two were born, just like you. So when I look at that, I can buy into John because I want to believe what he's selling me. Mm-hmm. Because I look at him and I go, I want this to be so good that I'm going to turn my brain off. I'm going to dial back and turn off my disbelief.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to let you sell me. And that's where the fun of this is. If you try to pick it apart too much, you ruin it for yourself. That part, I agree with what Triple H said. Sit back and enjoy the ride sometimes. John, his heel turn to me has been great. I wish it would have been better because, like Taka said, if he was here more, it'd feel like if he could have gone full time as last year, the heel turn would really, really dig in the roots. But because he's still giving it his all when he shows up, that's what keeps you tuning in to listen to him. Because at least when he's here, he's 110% in. He's not phoning in any of those promos whatsoever. He's truly, truly going with it, and he is selling it. So I am happy and excited to say that if this is the last time I ever see Randy and John verse, thank God I got to watch it when it happened. Because I was here at the beginning of his career, and it's kind of crazy I'm here at the end. So I think it'll be a fun match. Will it be match of the night? No. But is it going to definitely be a match where two certified first ballot Hall of Famers go down in history of, we have had these immortal battles for two decades, and this is where it ends? You're going to want to be there and stay and watch it live. You're going to want to, because it might be the last ever time you can say, I watched Randy versus John Cena.
Yeah, that and I think that's the like the main selling point to all this. But Tommy, do you have something to add?
Yes, one of the most famous clips of John Cena just being an absolute jokester backstage is back when Cody Rhodes had broken mirrors as his theme. And him just joking around, just, dang, I'm Johnny Rhodes! Like, the classic. It is one of the funniest clips of John Cena. But to quickly go back to the segment itself, I will say this. I love the mind games that Randy Orton was playing. Because as Cena had his back to him, he slowly comes up and does Cena's thing with his hand right as he comes up right before an RKO. And I love it.
Yeah, the other thing too that everyone seems to be talking about is the first guy that rushed the ring that was wearing a hoodie, that was not that wasn't Randy Orton, you know? But then later
on... No, the physique was all off.
Yeah. But then later on... the camera cut, and then you see Randy Orton, which left a lot of fans wondering, like, who was that guy? Who was the first guy that rushed the ring or whatever? But they didn't show his face. But I think it was one of those things, like, Randy Orton, you can say, just hired somebody to rush the ring to distract John Cena so Randy Orton could come in and, you know, hit that RKO. I don't think there's anything more to it than that, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. Because the physique was all off when it comes to that being Randy. There was just no way it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Randy, the man looks like a Greek statue, got human flesh and put on clothes. So
pretty much, yeah.
Man, chiseled out of marble. So...
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that was the main event segment for this Friday Night SmackDown before Backlash. But let's go all the way back. Let's backtrack to the beginning of the show because we started off with the tag team match. This tag team match was to hype up the Fatal 4-Way for the United States Championship. And we had LA Knight and Damian Priest on the same tag team. They were going to be facing Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa. Now, when I first heard about this match, I thought for sure we were going to get LA, Damian Priest versus Fatu and Drew McIntyre. However, it was no Drew McIntyre. It was Solo Sikoa. That's right. Our tribal chief, the real tribal chief, the one and only tribal chief, Solo Sikoa. You know what? Jacob Fatu, he's a smart guy. He's smart. If I had to choose between Drew McIntyre or Solo Sikoa to be my tag team partner, I'm going to go with Solo Sikoa, the greatest professional wrestler of all time ever. Of course, I want to have him on my team. It makes perfect sense. Anyway, long story short. No, all jokes aside, this was a great opening tag team match. And just like the main event segment with John Cena and Randy Orton, the opening segment did its job and got me hyped up for the Fatal 4-Way. I'm not a big fan of the Fatal 4-Way. But after what we saw tonight, I'm looking forward to the Fatal 4-Way at Backlash. LA Knight and Damian Priest, they had some issues. They couldn't really get along. you know, they were doing random blind tags on each other to get it on each other's nerves. It was a really, really good piece of business to hype up the match, the Fatal 4-Way at Backlash. But LA Knight ended up getting the pin on Solo Sikoa, of all people, which makes sense. Solo Sikoa is not part of the Fatal 4-Way, but he ate the pin. LA Knight got the pin on Solo Sikoa to give the win for LA Knight and Damian Priest. It was a good opening match. Your thoughts on this, you guys? Toxic, I believe you're up first on this one. What are your thoughts on this opening tag team match? If anything, what do you think about this?
The match was great. I like it. It's, even though it's the normal thing we see when there's a Fatal 4-Way, and two of the guys are, they were allies, but they are kind of like, I don't really like you because we're in this match. Even though it's one of those types of match, it's still a good match. Don't get me wrong. And Snug, I think you're the only one that would want to pick Solo over Drew. I would so much rather have Drew as a tag partner than Solo.
Yeah, well, you are a madman, so.
And well, you're an old man.
Can't buy a win, Snug.
And also, didn't Solo take the pin?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so I would be picking Drew 100% over Solo. Well,
it was only because they cheated, but yeah.
Yeah, whatever makes you go to sleep.
Anyway, Tommy, what about you? What do you think about this?
It was a good match. It truly was. Those two got along until after the match when an entire brawl started out. But I'm with Toxic on this one, Snug.
Oh,
I would much rather have Drew McIntyre than the man cosplaying as the OTC. That is exactly what Solo Sikoa is doing. He is over here cosplaying as the real tribal chief, the only tribal chief, Roman Reigns. Put them ones up, boost.
Yeah, I should probably also mention that after the match, there was a little afterbirth because after LA Knight got the pin on my tribal chief, Solo Sikoa. The real tribal chief, I should add. Jacob.
The real tribal chief.
Shut up, Tommy. Jacob Fatu took out LA Knight and Damian Priest, but one of the big questions about this whole thing was, you know, it's a Fatal 4-Way. Wrestling knowledge, wrestling psychology would tell you that all four of these guys that are involved in the Fatal 4-Way would be involved in this tag team match, but that wasn't the case. Instead of Drew McIntyre, it was Solo Sikoa. So Drew McIntyre eventually showed up after the match. Jacob Fatu took out Damian Priest, LA Knight, and then Drew McIntyre took out Jacob Fatu with the Claymore, leaving Drew McIntyre standing tall, holding the United States Championship belt over his head, standing tall over all three members of the Fatal 4-Way match. Does this change your guys' predictions from the other day for Backlash? Drew McIntyre was standing tall. He was standing looking strong. He was standing looking better than everyone else. Is it going to be Drew McIntyre to be the new United States champion at Backlash? Mr. Blood, you're up.
Yeah, thank you. Since you skipped me to go into that diatribe. I understand how you feel about the multi-man match being run back only 3 weeks after they just ran it. But like I said last week, you can run a Fatal 4-Way match so many ways that it doesn't even look reminiscent of the other ways, because there's so many guys involved, so many different movesets and maneuvers involved, so many ways to book a finish. There's no DQ. Like, there's so many ways that this can go, right? As far as Solo, the real tribal queef, chief goes, it's one of those things where, look, you got a good little jobber there to take the pin. I just find it funny that he's eating a pin to LA Knight, who couldn't beat Roman Reigns, but somehow he was able to get a pin over Roman Reigns in a tag match last year. But that being said, now he can't buy a win as far as it's concerned. I'm wondering at what point Tongaloa gets re-involved when they bring him back. Because I'm noticing a lot's going on mainly in the story with Jacob and Solo. I feel like we're not seeing Tama as often. And I feel like, I know that Tong has been injured since War Games, but as far as it's concerned, I'm wondering, well, at some point you got to think we're reintroducing, if they bring him back into the story like he left the story, Bronson Reed, at some point, could be a factor in this match if he re-debuts or comes back tomorrow to help Jacob retain. We could have Tongaloa, you know, pull the classic, wears the hoodie down to the ring, screws over Drew, gives Drew all that credence to keep hating the bloodline. And it's just, there's so many ways this could go. And I think that a lot of this match is going to be booked around the fact there are factors we can't exactly pinpoint, because there is more to worry about than just Solo Sikoa interfering on Jacob's behalf and helping him. We could also have Solo interfere and screw Jacob and the title switches hands, because we've been having Triple H book these swerves like right before Mania, then title switches out of fucking nowhere just because he could, you know? So I think it'll be interesting to see. I liked the match. I thought the match was great. I thought it was, I liked how, I mean, we've seen it a million times. Hey, you know, you and I were both baby faces, but we're not getting along because we both have the same goal, but we got to work together. So because of our pride and we both want to be top guys and the most over guy in the match, we're going to one-up each other and tag ourselves in on each other, blind tags. Speaking of tags, one thing that did annoy me, I did not see, for the finish, I did not see Jacob tag out to Solo before Solo ate the BFT. Because all of a sudden we see Jacob go down, he rolls out the ring. Out of nowhere, you see, because he was down for the count because Damian hit him with the rebound clothesline, was setting up for his finish, the South of Heaven. You get the blind tag in by LA Knight. They argue and bicker. LA Knight gets bumped straight into Damian by Solo Sikoa, which sends Damian out of the ring. And then all of a sudden he tries to, he super kicks the shit out of freaking, out of LA Knight, and then goes to set up for, you know, the thumb. Well, the Samoan Spike. Here's the thing. We only saw Solo come in and attack them, then set up for a finish. We never saw the ref signal a tag. We never saw a tag out. So was Solo even the legal man to eat that pin? That's the only thing that bugged me about the match.
See, I told you. They cheated. Hold on.
Yes, it was. Solo was the legal man. Joe Tessitore said that the tag between Solo and Jacob was not caught on camera.
Okay, so it was mentioned then? Fine, thank you.
Yes.
All right, so okay, then point receded. Point is that I think that the match was done intelligently, booked intelligently. It means that all the guys in the match get to go over strong. So it lets LA and Damian maintain their win while keeping them argumentative. It puts Drew over as the guy standing tall and the potential usurper tomorrow night, which probably isn't going to happen. And Solo eats the pin so Jacob doesn't look weak in defeat. And it shows that Solo is the weak link between the bloodline, or this version of the bloodline. Solo is the weak link. So unless you throw Tongaloa in there, but you can't. Otherwise, it'd be him. So Solo standing in for the weakest link. But I think this match is going to be fun tomorrow. I think it's going to be the best worked match in ring tomorrow. I really do. I think that this is going to be the match of the night. I'd even wager on it. I do think this will be the match of the night tomorrow. I said it before. Look at the work rate of the guys in the ring, right? Look at the story. Like, this goes back, and I said this before, but for any new listeners, this reminds me of this. It goes back to the SmackDown 6, way back in the day, 20-something years ago, when you had, like, Rey Mysterio, and you had freaking Chris Benoit, and you had freaking, I think it was Kurt Angle and Edge, all on the same show, and there was two other guys on blanket for no reason, I think Hurricane Helms and someone else. But the SmackDown 6, just these six guys who kept putting on consistently insanely good matches with great stories, even when they weren't in the title pictures, they were the best thing on the show. It's the same thing here. Guys in the mid-card going out there as workhorses, putting on insanely great matches with great story, and it's better, in my opinion, and I feel like a lot of people would agree, better than the Undisputed Championship story currently happening. Because the story that's going to be told about that Undisputed title is going to be who's next. That's what it's going to be. Every time John feuds someone, are you the guy to beat me? No. Are you the guy to beat me? No. Until they put it on Cody or someone wins Money in the Bank and cashes in on him, that's going to be the story every single feud John has. There'll be more intricate stories told, but that will be the main focal point. I'm the last real champion. You can't beat me. Bullshit, I can beat you. I'm going to beat you. I lose. You're still the champion. And that's what it's going to be. This is more interesting because you have bloodline stuff in there. You've got the Drew hatred of Damian in there. You've got the rise of Jacob in there. And you have LA Knight trying to prove that he is someone who belongs as a champion. And you have all these interwoven stories. And it's more interesting than anything else on SmackDown, in my opinion. So I think I might speak for everybody here. You can tell me if I'm wrong. Just, you know, yeet for me if you think I'm correct here.
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. We're not yeeting. We don't do that here, y'all.
Snug. Is this going to be the match of the weekend? Yeet or no yeet?
If you guys yeet, I will end this entire fucking live. I swear to God.
So yeet. Try me.
Yeah, thank you,
Tom. Yeet.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank with you, that, Tom. You guys, we'll see you guys next time. This podcast is a no. I'm just kidding.
Called us bluff.
All right. Who's up next? Are we going to the next segment? Honestly, I forgot. Yeah. I lost track.
Yeah, we're gonna go on to the next segment.
All right. Let's talk about the women's division. The Women's United States Championship. Selena Vega called out Chelsea Green and Piper Niven on SmackDown for a tag team match, and she was going to have a surprise opponent. And, you know, people were, you know, we were wondering, who is it going to be? Who is it going to be? I thought it was going to be Mia Yim. A lot of people assume it was going to be Alexa Bliss, and I don't want to really get too much into this, but the fact that it was Alexa Bliss was Selena Vega's surprise partner, but they had a nice little stare down that I thought was really interesting, because it looks like now we have some more competitors for that Women's United States title, and I would be down to see Alexa Bliss go after that championship title. Maybe we can see Alexa Bliss versus Selena Vega. Honestly, I just rather see Alexa Bliss as a Women's United States Championship than Selena Vega. That's just me. I don't know.
You just hate the LWO in general. Shut up.
No, I really don't. I don't hate the LWO. I just hate Selena Vega. Anyways, with that being said, Tommy, I think you're up first this time, right?
Yeah, I am.
Go ahead. What did you think about this whole thing with Alexa Bliss being Selena Vega's surprise partner tonight?
It honestly was great. This is the first time we have seen her ever since the Elimination Chamber. We have not seen her since. I absolutely loved it. Why? Because we get to see more Alexa Bliss. We get to actually see her instead of her just sitting back and waiting for the Wyatt Six to come back. Because let's be honest, she will get involved into that storyline. And because there's no possible way she's not. So, with that.
Pause. Mr. Blood, navigate this thing. I have to pee real quick. I'll be right back. Go ahead, Tommy.
So, with that, what I will say is this. Alexa Bliss coming back was great. I love the fact that it ended with Alexa Bliss, if I'm correct, pinning, was it Chelsea? If I'm correct? Yes. And then that stare down happens. But what I'm most interested in is what happened a little bit after this match. After Charlotte's promo. What the hell did those two talk about backstage?
So I'll set that up real quick for you, Tommy. So after the match, later we get a segment between Jade Cargill and Charlotte Flair, where Charlotte's trying to get the crowd to basically get on her side. She throws a pitch fit. They face-to-face standing outside the apron when Jade interrupts her. Jade tells her, go to the back of the line. She's next in line for the title. We then cut later down to another segment where Charlotte's backstage. She's huffing and puffing and leaving. And Nick Aldis is trying to get her to stop from leaving, tell her she needs to be more professional. She can't throw a fit whenever things don't go her way. And that if she's going to be the veteran she says she is, then she needs to lead by example. This leads to her brushing off Nick Aldis one last time to go to the airport. She signals for her driver to take her to the airport. And just as she's about to enter her SUV, the door is slammed shut by someone off screen. Camera pans over. It is Alexa Bliss stating, we need to talk. So, Tommy, what do you think that could possibly mean?
Charlotte's main thing that she said during her promo is the fact that she wants another shot at the women's title. Because of fucking course she does. She's a Flair. She thinks every world title belongs to her, pretty much. So with that, I do think that maybe they'll form up a team. Maybe that's what they were talking about. Maybe Alexa Bliss will help her out. Other than that, I'm not very sure.
All right. So my thoughts on all of this, I think that the match itself, for, you know, Chelsea Green, Piper Niven, Alexa Bliss's surprise return, and Zelina Vega, the tag match was what it was. It was a SmackDown women's tag match. But as far as it's concerned, the Alexa Bliss surprise return did actually pique my interest. But it piqued my interest because if you're going to bring her back, why did you bring her back on the opposite brand of the Wyatt Six when she was just recently reported? It was reported backstage that she was being brought back to potentially lead the Wyatt Six. That is an actual news report that came out about 2 weeks ago. So, yes, Toxic.
The Wyatts are on SmackDown. They got transferred during the Final Testament versus the Wyatts story.
Okay, thank you. So, I stand corrected. So she's brought back on the correct brand. Okay, so now that must mean Bo Dallas has got to be pretty close to recovered. Because you think if you're trying to insert her into the story, you wouldn't bring her back unless you knew Bo was ready to go. Now, another thing here is that when it comes to the fact that Alexa, when talking to Charlotte, backstage, when Charlotte's segment carried back with Nick Aldis, as I've already set up, we need to talk. Well, this could mean a couple things. They're both now veterans in the business, in this company. They were both some of the two top women in their divisions. We have Charlotte, the 15-time, I believe, world champion. And we have Alexa, the 5-time world champion. But here's two things that neither of those women are. They're not Grand Slam champions. because neither of them have held the new women's Intercontinental or United States Championship belts. They have not held the women's tag team championships since they've been introduced. So these girls are kind of starting back from square one. They're two vets. Both of them have a history. And at the end of the day, is it possible that a babyface Alexa Bliss could potentially be trying to, hear me out here, and this is a long one, this is a shot in the dark, and it could be very wrong, convince Charlotte to team up with her and the Wyatts? Or it's Alexa turning heel with Charlotte. And maybe they're scrapping Alexa's involvement with the Wyatt Six. Because why would you, if she's supposed to be a part of the Wyatt Six and lead it, what does Charlotte Flair have to do with that at all? You wouldn't set this up as a cliffhanger if it wasn't supposed to go somewhere regarding perhaps a Wyatt Six mission. Remember, the Wyatt Six only do things when they feel predicated. Remember when they went after Chad, it was because they were going after people who abandoned their families. Okay? So when they went after, you know, so like what I'm saying is, I'm forgetting the second reason they went after, but the Wyatt Six only attack people when they have a motive. And it's always a patterned motive, a reason, a specific reason. So what reason, if Alexa is leading the Wyatt Six, could she have for needing to have something to do in story with Charlotte Flair that they're cliffhanging us on right now? Because they just kind of made it clear to us that Jade Cargill is moving into that championship contender spot, and they're moving Charlotte away from it for the time being. So if that's the case, what is Charlotte's next story? What does it have to do with Alexa Bliss? And more importantly, what does it have to do with Alexa Bliss and the Wyatt Six faction? Because you got to assume they're coming back within the next couple weeks. Shit, we could get a surprise return tomorrow.
Oh, I know. I know. Charlotte Flair is going to be the next leader of the Wyatt Six.
Possible?
No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No.
I mean, hey, looking at Nick Khan and Triple H's writing, swerving is what he likes to do. It's not hard to say that we might not just get Alexa Bliss running the Wyatt Six. They're going to expand that faction. Maybe they realize they need the GOAT, Charlotte Flair, in their group. Or Charlotte is just getting tricked by Alexa, and Alexa's buddying up to her so she can be their first victim. And Charlotte's next feud is against an Alexa Bliss that betrays her.
Yeah, I don't know. When it comes to all this with Alexa Bliss coming back tonight on SmackDown after being away again, who's up? Who's next?
Toxic. Toxic, what are your thoughts on the match and the segment after?
The match was okay, but I'm just more interested in why Alexa is back. I mean, it could be, oh, home state hero, or it could be like what we've been saying, the Wyatts. Like, I'm expecting to see them next week. Like, I want to see them next week. Not that it's possible. I don't know if it is. Anything's possible. But I'm expecting, I actually agree with Blood that what if Alexa's trying to trick Charlotte so that they reveal that Charlotte's their first target for their second run back, because they've been gone for a while. It's just confusing, the story. I mean, it's not a bad confusing. It's a good confusing that, like, you get interested and you want to know what happens next. That's where I'm at in the whole Alexa Bliss tagging with Zelina Vega and the Wyatts and just anything. Or, anyways, what they could also do is they have Alexa team with Charlotte for a while, And then when the Wyatts come back, we get Chelsea Green's group versus Charlotte, Alexa, and Nikki Cross. It's possible.
I actually just had another idea that you just gave me, Toxic. I like where your mind's going. When you said that they could tag together for a while, what if the story is that maybe the Wyatt Six, maybe Charlotte's not their target. Maybe they're trying to help rehabilitate. Maybe this run of the Wyatt Six, what if this version of the Wyatt Six is about rehabilitation because Bo's been out injured? What if he takes the story of his real life injury, rehabilitating himself to come back? What if, because remember, their last thing was about those who abandoned their families. That had to do with Bray. Now he's been injured, rehabilitation. What if they are trying to rehabilitate the image of Charlotte Flair to the fans? And maybe that's why Charlotte's promo tonight was so heavy-centric on how come you guys don't love me after everything I've done for you? Why do you have a problem with me? She was so very focused on that in that promo, so heavily focused on that promo tonight. She kept stating over and over again, why don't you guys like me? What do I have to do to get you to appreciate me? I'm the GOAT. After everything I've done for this division, she said to Nick Aldis. So what if the story for Alexa Bliss and Charlotte is rehabilitating Charlotte? She tags with her for a bit to try to rework her image into that of a babyface. Maybe by her being paired with someone as beloved as Alexa, it could hopefully turn her face. But the real story is, no matter how hard they try, Charlotte can't be saved. And then she becomes Alexa's target.
That's what I like about the Wyatts so much. There's all these different what ifs or like what's going to happen next. It's just so it's fun to figure out what they're going to try and do next.
Did you hear what did you hear the theory, Snug?
No, not talking about
that. Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think about that idea that if the story of the Wyatt Six return, last time it was about being there for your family, not abandoning them, that was Bray. What if this story is about rehabilitation because of Bo Dallas's return from injury, and maybe Alexa is trying to help rehabilitate Charlotte's image into a baby face, tags with her for a little bit, realizes Charlotte's beyond saving because no matter how hard Charlotte tries, they keep booing and she can't stop doing heel things. And maybe eventually Alexa gives up on her, and then Charlotte becomes a target of the Wyatt Six. Her whole promo tonight was heavy-centric on why won't you love me? Why won't you care about me? I've done everything I can for you. She said it to Nick Aldis. After everything I've done with this division, and no one wants me here. No one likes me. And then Alexa's like, we need to talk. What if the story is about rehabilitation? It would fit with Bo's return and departure. Rehabilitation from injury. Rehabilitation can mean many different things. Rehabilitating your image, rehabilitating your love for the sport, rehabilitating an injury.
Oh, man. That's interesting. I definitely
Sorry, go ahead. I was just saying that's my theory.
Yeah, no, I definitely see where your head is at with this. Oh, man. I just don't know how I feel about seeing Charlotte Flair being involved with the Wyatt Six, because Charlotte Flair, to me, she's one of the top stars in the women's division. To me, how I see it. And I don't know if involving her with the Wyatt Six would be a good thing for her. I'm more interested in the stare down with Jade Cargill. Right after Charlotte Flair cut that promo on the audience and she got booed out of the arena, she had another stare down with Jade Cargill, which is like the third stare down that we've seen with Jade Cargill and Charlotte Flair. I'm more interested in that. But You guys are on to something, honestly.
I mean, this could just be a side quest to get to that, because I definitely think Jade is the next person they're trying to set up for Tiffany. So I think that this is a cool down for Charlotte. They're going to use the heat she has, because if you pair her with Alexa, who's so beloved, and you have them do that heel babyface team thing. One, the babyface tries to help the heel get in touch with their babyface side, and no matter how hard Charlotte tries, she just can't shake the heel. She can't shake the arrogance and the insecurity, and the fans still won't accept her, and that makes her crack and crack and crack until finally Alexa goes, you know what, you're beyond saving. And then the lights go down, Wyatt Six.
Very likely. I mean, I like it. I like this idea. And this is a perfect segue to, like, the next thing that I want to talk about. Like, we talked about this thing with Alexa Bliss being involved with Zelina Vega. And I think that's great for the women's United States title division. And then I wanted to move on to the Charlotte Flair promo because, like you said, Charlotte Flair, she came out and she was like, hey, I'm the greatest of all time. Why are you guys booing me? And this, that, and the other. I think people are starting to forget who Charlotte Flair actually is.
Preach.
I feel like people
might... Go ahead, Snug. Crash out.
No, not tonight. Not tonight. I want to make a different episode about the greatness of Charlotte Flair. I want us to remind the people of who the fuck Charlotte Flair actually is. Because I feel like people are starting to forget how great she is. I know she's a heel. People are not supposed to like her, and Charlotte Flair is doing a great job of doing that. But, like, we need to have a whole nother episode of how great this fucking person is. I mean, Charlotte Flair is a, you know, but anyway, my question about this whole segment, I want to get your guys' thoughts. Blood, I believe you're up first on this one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
When it comes to the Charlotte Flair promo, did you get a chance to see it? What did you think?
I did. I actually had mentioned it when you had taken a sabbatical because I set the whole thing up. But look, to what you said, it's no secret. Charlotte Flair, I've said this a million times. I'll scream it from the mountaintops and I'll yodel it throughout Switzerland. Charlotte Flair is my favorite female professional wrestler of all time. Not only is she the most consistent in-ring woman's performer in that company and has been for well over nearly a decade and a half, by the way. Okay. She's been in NXT in 2011 or 12, main roster by 12 or 13. The woman has been consistent and only got better. She never got worse. She never missed a step. Injuries to her knee aside, deviate, and for all the people who shit all over her looks, she had to have surgery. She had a deviated septum. Cry about it. Leave the woman alone. If you want to judge Charlotte Flair, judge her on her promo work, on her in-ring work, and on her ability as a performer, because that's what you're there to do. Don't try to say she sucks because she got plastic surgery. That's a stupid defense. That's childish. And it doesn't make you a wrestling fan. It makes you a critic. Okay? And as far as concerned, this woman is not only the most consistent WrestleMania woman's performer I've ever seen. I have never seen a woman more willing to go balls to the walls with her opponent over and over again and put it all on the line every single Mania. People say that, she's Charlotte Hogan. That's funny, because didn't she just put Tiffany over? Didn't she put Rhea over? Okay, let's see. Didn't she put Carmella over? Remember Carmella? She put Carmella over, okay?
All right, hold on, Blood, though, but save it for the
I know,
for
but the I'm episode. Saying, but I say all that because it goes into this promo. She said, why are you booing me? Why are you showing me so much disrespect? After everything we've been through together, after everything I've done for this division, I am the GOAT. I am the greatest women's wrestler of all time. After everything I've done for women's wrestling in general, you still show me disrespect. And she's right, okay? The fans only hate her because the booking has made her oversaturated over the years. She just came back, guys. She hadn't been here in over a year. How are you already oversaturated on someone you haven't seen in a year and 5-6 months, actually, December of 2023? But even with Becky, who's been gone for a year, as a heel, you still want to cheer Becky. Like, she is putting over young and up-and-coming talent every time she returns, because she doesn't. Okay? So when I listen to this promo, it makes me feel bad for Charlotte, because I'm a Charlotte defender. I know what Charlotte's done for the industry. I know what she's brought to the business. And she gets the same treatment that they gave Roman. He was doing the best he could. It wasn't his fault that they just wanted to shove him down our throats. So to sit there, and you can boo the character, but don't go online and chastise and tear the performer herself down for doing the job that she's tasked with doing. She is all of those things that she said in that promo. She is the greatest women's wrestler of all time. Highest championship count. Most consistent WrestleMania performances. And if I remember correctly, she's got the record for the most most actual WrestleMania appearances. Okay? She's wrestling the main event. Okay? She's literally, she's Charlotte fucking Flair. In the beginning, you could have said it was her last name that brought her to the dance. But guess what? It's her in-ring ability. It's always been her consistent performances, her character work that kept her on the dance floor. She is phenomenal. And I'm hoping at some point this year, these fans start to see just how amazing Charlotte Flair genuinely is, because she gives it her all no matter what they give to her. And I thought this promo was perfect, because it sets up the reality in which Charlotte's actually truly being treated.
Yeah, most definitely. Mr. Toxic.
Yeet.
Go for it.
Okay. It's not that I don't like Charlotte. It's just, sometimes she, and this is, this is just me, in my opinion. She's just getting too boring to me. She's the egotistical heel. She's the arrogant, oh, I'm the greatest of all time. When there's a lot more better wrestlers, and I'm not trying to put her down or anything. I just like a lot more people more than Charlotte Flair. I feel like she's been fed a bunch, just like Roman has. And I'm just not interested as I was in like 2023 during the War Games season. In 2023, I was interested in her. Now, I'm not that interested.
Nice. Okay. Tommy, what about you?
For this, I will say, Charlotte is Charlotte for me. She's great on the mic. I get that. Her in-ring ability, phenomenal. And that is not just a nickname like it is AJ Styles. And I get everything that she's done. And I'm with her on this when she absolutely deserves more respect than what she was given tonight. But that one word, respect, she loves shoving that down our throats tonight. Almost her entire promo was her looking around like, hey, I've done all of these things. Why do you disrespect me? Why do you disrespect me so much? If you keep disrespecting me, I will just walk out. Why do you keep disrespecting me? Like, I get it. Right now, they're severely disrespecting you. And I get that. Stop shoving it down my throat. You are the heel. They are supposed to disrespect you right now. But heel character aside, it was a great promo. I love the fact that Jade Cargill did interrupt closer to the end, leading to the line, "Hey, Charlotte, get to the back of the line." Like, because that in itself, the way Jade Cargill said it, it must have really dug into her. That just because she's a Flair does not mean she gets title shot after title shot after title shot, including the random immediate WrestleMania spot, the world title shot that she got when she randomly won the Rumble the moment she comes back. One match and you're already WrestleMania? It just drove me crazy on that.
Tommy, the thing that upsets me about her return is the fact that the fans hate that she won the Royal Rumble. If she didn't win the Royal Rumble, Tiffany doesn't get to go over on the biggest women's star they have. Tiffany needed, as a character and as a new champion, Tiffany needed Charlotte to win so she could get the rub from Charlotte. You needed Charlotte to get the Rumble win. It's the only way Tiffany...
Then why not have her win the chamber?
Well, same thing. Why have Bianca win it? It comes...
Okay, Bianca made no sense. Charlotte, on the other hand...
Charlotte made sense to be in that chamber. However, that chamber was for the person for the Raw title, not the SmackDown title.
It could have gone a completely different way if she didn't win it. We don't know that. It could have
gone a completely different way. But what's the easier way? A two-month convoluted build to get her to Tiffany, or having her win the Rumble because she is the GOAT, and then that way you can build between her and Tiffany, even though it went off the rails. You need to show, shit, Charlotte can come back from a year and a half off of an injury, win the Rumble. That only makes her look as strong and as undefeatable as possible, right? Now Tiffany can say, I beat the most unstoppable woman this roster has ever seen. You want to build up Charlotte's accolades so it makes Tiffany look even better by comparison when she beats her. It's
you're right.
You have to at that point.
You're right. Unfortunately, the Charlotte Glazer is right.
I'm happy to be a Charlotte Glazer, Krispy Kreme.
Here's another thing.
Oh, my God.
But I love the fact that you mentioned the fact that the fans are hating on her looks and all of that just because of the fact that she had plastic surgery and all of that. Plastic surgery aside, she's still hot as fuck.
Oh, God. Tonight, she looked gorgeous. But it's one of those things where fans act like it's all the new fans that are complaining too, right? Because these newer fans in the last 5 years had even spent 5 seconds in the Attitude Era, you couldn't find a diva that didn't have plastic surgery. So I love how it's selective now. But The Rock had breast surgery, reduction surgery. I don't see anybody throwing him shade. Okay? So it's like, that's how I know that the fans who hate on Charlotte that way, you're not fans, you're critics.
No, you guys, listen. We're going to have a whole ass episode about Charlotte Flair, all right? Because I really do want to talk about that.
Well, hey, look, you know what? I'll say my last point then. They'll hate on her for that. What, Roman can come back with a brand new face, a whole new set of teeth, a surgically enhanced nose, which he had done for a deviated septum as well. He can have veneers completely replaced in his mouth, because if you look at Roman before 2020 and you look at him now, he had surgery. They love him for it. And he was shoved down our throats just as much as Charlotte was, maybe even more. the double standard. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well,
with that, you guys, I think we got to get up out of here. It's about that time. That was well. With that being said, you guys, that was a Friday Night SmackDown review with the Snug Wrestling Podcast. Thanks to the Snug Wrestling crew, Mr. Blood, Toxic, Tommy. No BT Knight tonight because apparently he has a life. He has stuff to do, unlike us. But with that being said, we will see you guys next time. Thanks to everybody that was hanging out with us on the comments and liking and sharing and all that good stuff. We'll see you next time. Happy Mother's Day weekend. Team No Ye. Let's get the fuck up out of here. Let's go. Bye-bye. Goodbye. Let's go now.